The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
The show is brought to you by Miles Franklin. When it comes to protecting your wealth, you know there's nothing better than gold and silver. And when I want gold and silver, I go to Miles Franklin because they've been around 22 years, and when you buy, they ship. For more information, go to milesfranklin.com or call them at 800-822-8080 and get a free quote. WGCH, this is Carrie Lutz, and you're listening to the Financial Survival Network. The show is brought to you by Miles Franklin. When it comes to protecting your wealth, you know there's nothing better than gold and silver. And when I want gold and silver, I go to Miles Franklin, because they've been around 22 years, and when you buy, they ship. For more information, go to milesfranklin.com or call them at 800-822-8080 and get a free quote. And you're back with Carrie Lutz and Mickey Fulp talking about the monthly performance of the markets in March of 2012. Surprises, some, and some not so surprises. Mickey, how are you today?
I'm well, Carrie.
Well, welcome back. And what was your take on these markets for the past month?
Well, the broader markets all continued their rise. We saw this start at the beginning of the year, and it has continued unabated. Dow's up 2% over the month, S&P 500 up 3%, NASDAQ up 4%. The last time we talked in February, we were lamenting the fact that the small caps had not participated, and we started to see the small caps start to perform a little better, with the Russell 2000 up 2% for the month. But the commodities business was on the downswing. So the commodities-rich Toronto Stock Exchange was down 2%, and that, of course, reflects the weakness in oil and the weakness in commodities. More importantly, the Venture Exchange, which is what we pay most attention to, was down a whopping 6% over the month. But year to date, still up 5%. The microcaps have not participated in this rally, especially in the junior resource sector. As Eric Coffin said in Calgary on Saturday, gold stocks suck, and I could not agree more. Contrary to that, we also watch very closely emerging markets. They were down 4%. In the month, and I think that would reflect the slowdown in China, but overall year to date, emerging market index is up a whopping 14%, the best performer worldwide by far.
That's pretty good. So the emerging markets are really the star performers so far this year. We do see that there's going to be a slowdown in China. In fact, I was looking at a chart of their market yesterday that I put up on our new blog, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, that showed an ascending triangle that looked like it's ripe for a crash on the Shanghai Exchange. So we're just going to have to see how that shakes out. But the story certainly appears with the BRICS and the emerging market that that's where the center of financial gravity in the world and the universe is really heading to, isn't it?
That's correct. And of course, those markets are very important part of what goes in the commodity sector. And all in all, the metals were all down over the month, the metals and energy issues. So gold was down 3% in March, silver down 7%. We often talk about how much more volatile silver is than gold, and that was reflected last month. Platinum down 2% for the month, so it was the star performer, but still down 2%.
And it recrossed, right? They recrossed gold and silver.
Yes, it did recross. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. Palladium down 7%. So you alluded to this. Let's look at the metal ratios. Gold to silver ratio creeped up a bit, but still at 52. Very comfortable with that ratio in historic context or recent history. The platinum to gold ratio, the last time we talked in mid-March, we talked a lot about metal ratios. At that time, it had gone above one again. Now it's flip-flop, but it's still hanging in at 0.98. And in the long term, I think we would still expect the platinum to gold ratio to go well over one. Platinum to palladium treading water at 2.3. The metal that most reflects economic world health, of course, is copper. We've talked about that ad infinitum. It was flat over the month, but there's been some changes in inventories and warehouse stocks and can kind of tell us which way we may expect the copper market to go. LME stocks are now at four-year lows, 256,000 tons. That's not even 5 days worth of world supply. The cancel warrants, which we've talked about before, still at eight-year highs of about 33%. But here's what's changed, Gary. The Shanghai arbitrage appears to be ending. Shanghai stocks have hit a 10-year high in mid-March, and now that is starting to drop. So we are starting to see movement out of Shanghai warehouses. So that bodes well for the copper industry.
And we had a big announcement over the weekend, which to me was really kind of, I guess you would call it, a real alarm signal. And that was that the Canadian government is going to stop minting pennies. Now, pennies are kind of useless anyway, but the Canadian penny is worth 1.5 times its face value. That is not a sign that the Canadian government and the mint expect copper prices to go down, is it?
No, it certainly is not. When you're losing money, not only in making the coins, but in the metal value of coins, it's time to stop. Don't we wish the U.S. would do likewise and quit making our zinc alloy copper-clad pennies, which certainly are worthless in terms of metal value, or nearly worthless, but cost more to produce than they are worth. So,
and as long as we're talking about pocket change, let's talk about nickels, because nickel, you know, the name is such a misnomer because it actually has 75% copper in it. But the value of a nickel right now, metallic value only, forget about what it costs to make, to mint, is currently at, it's at 5.5 cents just about. That's almost 10% above face value. That's going to be the next coin in the U.S. to fall. That next breakout in copper, when it occurs, and we're both in agreement it's going to, is going to lead to the demise of the copper nickel in the U.S. probably.
Well, I don't really know about that, but there's nothing wrong with hoarding nickels when they are the value of the metal is higher than the value, face value of the coin. That's been the case for just about 5 years or so now. So U.S. citizens should, that do hoard nickels, should beware that it is a crime to melt down nickels and sell them for their metal content.
That's true, but they're probably going to go out of circulation. Once the government starts making them out of zinc as well, the nickel will disappear, the pre-whatever it is. Right now, 2012, it's still 75% copper, but when the mint decides to substitute cheaper metals for it, just like it did with the penny, it's gone. People will hoard them, and you'll never see another pre-2012 nickel. It's just Gresham's Law at work.
Yes, it is.
So, Mickey, we talked a lot about energy last time. We've had some movement there, but the direction's still a little bit hazy, isn't it?
Well, oil was down 3%, but that's really of not much concern. It has, I think, little to do with supply-demand fundamentals. Geopolitics oftentimes controls the oil price. Oil down to $103 a barrel. I think all oil producers are very happy with that. Well, of course, the big story of the month once again is natural gas and how low can it go, down to $1.98 on Friday. That is, I don't know how long it's been since it's been that low. Certainly sometime right post global financial crisis, if memory serves, but down a whopping 19% on the month. There's no hope for natural gas. How low can it go? I've seen some analysts saying as low as a dollar. The oil to gas ratio is now 52, and we are approaching the low demand spring season for natural gas. So doesn't look good for the future, near-term future of natural gas. Moving on to uranium, spot price dropped a dollar over the month down to $51, 2% drop from 52 to 51. But I still remain a uranium bull. The Financial Times of London reported last week that Japan's cost for abandoning its nuclear power industry, with now 52 of 54 reactors offline, shut down for maintenance or safety checks or whatever, is costing Japan a whopping $123 million a day. Annualized, that's $450 billion per year. Wow. At one time, nuclear power contributed 30% of Japan's power supply. I think that means massive brownouts are coming to Tokyo this summer.
And that's going to affect their manufacturing capability as well. Has to, right?
Oh, yes. It affects their economy up and down because energy inputs are by far the highest cost of anything, and the cost of producing goods and certainly in transporting goods. So it is my opinion that by the end of the year that Japan will have many more nuclear power plants producing electricity. This cannot continue. It's going to destroy their economy.
They have to put them back on the grid, the ones that aren't damaged or that have been repaired and don't present a threat are going to go back on.
Well, and there's only four that are damaged and will never produce again. So of the 54, four will be offline forever. So that gives them 50. We would expect a significant number of those to come back online by the end of the year, which is very bullish and positive for the uranium spot price.
Yeah, and you have to realize people, given the choice, they're going to take the risk of nuclear power rather than not having any power whatsoever. They want their air conditioners. They want their heating. They want the modern life. They want the conveniences. And they're not willing to forego nuclear power and forego all those conveniences. It's just not going to happen in the modern world. It can't.
No, it cannot.
I mean, I live where I am about 18 miles from Indian Point as the crow flies. And for those of you unaware, Indian Point is in Westchester County, New York. It provides anywhere from 20 to 40% of the electricity in this region. Sometimes even more. At night, they don't shut the nukes down because the nukes just produce. They don't want to ever shut them down if they can avoid it, but sometimes they have to. But all the other plants get shut down, and the fact of the matter is there is nothing out there that can replace the amount of power that those plants generate. Now, one thing I did read is that the depressed prices of natural gas are decreasing the economic benefits of going nuclear, and that might figure into the equation for how many plants get built in the United States. But the ones that are out there are going to keep producing, and in certain parts of the world where natural gas, as you said, in Asia it's $15 a million BTUs, and in Europe it's $10 per million BTUs, in those places nuclear just makes too much sense, right?
Absolutely, Kerry. It is a future power baseline power source for the world, and get used to it.
Accept it and and the ones that are coming, this new generation, I hate to say they're foolproof or fail-proof, but they're as close to it as anything that we can produce. There's virtually no risk of a meltdown, even in the type of tsunami conditions that took place in Japan, right? I mean, there just isn't.
Well, it's one of these things where we lived and we learned, and it was a black swan event that's probably unique to that particular part of the world, but certainly will improve safety characteristics of future nuclear power plants. There were already changes that had been made in cooling systems that were much more fail-safe, and so it is the hand we have been dealt. It will improve nuclear safety throughout the world, and that's a good thing, and now it's time to get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but a lot of people don't want to get on with it, but we don't really have a choice. So let's just do it. Anything else we've got here, Mickey?
That's about it for today. I am cautiously optimistic for the next month or so. The U.S. markets continue unabated, and that generally leads to a trickle-down effect. So let's hope that it starts working its way down to the juniors. And there are many things in junior resource sector to be interested in, certainly oil, graphite. I'm still looking for those elusive copper oxide deposits and uranium. Looks very bullish. And I have to concur that gold stocks suck. So, but at some point, they will become beaten up enough that they become buys.
Every dog has its day, right?
Most certainly, and we need the gold producers to perform better and dividend and reward their shareholders, and let's hope that shareholder pressure will force them to do that in the near future.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense for these mining companies to be sitting on huge hoards of cash that are unneeded in their business, even for expansion, for capital projects. Once you take all that off, and you leave in a margin of safety, their whole reason for being is they're producing wealth out of the ground that isn't subject to inflationary pressures quite the way that paper currencies are. So if you look at it that way, they should be returning this value to the shareholders. And I think the Apple move, even though there's other reasons for it, the Apple move to me is seminal. It's going to lead to a rebirth of dividend-paying natural resource stocks and stocks in general, because once upon a time when analysts calculated what a stock was worth, they had the discounted dividend model, and that one worked really well for decades. And then after World War II, we got into the growth stock model, and that was the end of dividends. And then it was also taxes that tax dividends the same as ordinary income. Now you've got an 85% exemption in the States on dividend income and reinvestments, drip plans. There's so many benefits to dividends that they're just going to be brought to the table kicking and screaming.
Well, I hope so, and there's no better way to develop a loyal shareholder if you are a corporation than to return capital to them through a dividend. So let's hope the gold stocks catch up with the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think so. And it also immunizes your stock to some extent from crashes, because the people who are holding dividend-paying stocks are not the kind of people, as a rule, who will be running out of the stock just because the market's looking bad, because they're in it for the income. But story for another day. Hey, Mickey, mercenarygeologist.com. People want to learn more about you. Where else can they go?
Mercenarygeologist.asia if they're bilingual or read Chinese.
All right, Mickey. Hey, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and we'll see what these markets are doing. So far, gold and silver on April 2nd on Monday are up pretty nicely. We'll see if that's part of a trend.
I look forward to it, Kerry. Thanks as always.
Yeah, you too.